A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this piece from the New Stack. A startup called Subquadratic just dropped a model with a 12 million token context window, and it's not just a press release flex. They're claiming they've actually cracked the quadratic attention bottleneck that's been the glass ceiling for every transformer since 2017. The piece is by Frederick Lardinoy, and it's got real benchmarks, real architecture claims, and a pretty bold assertion that they're beating GPT-515 on retrieval. There's a lot of technical meat here. So where do we even start?
I want to start with what subquadratic actually means, because the name of the company is the whole thesis. Every transformer since Vaswani's 2017 paper has this fundamental scaling problem. When you have n tokens in your context window, the self-attention mechanism compares every token to every other token. That's n squared pairwise comparisons. Double your context from 100,000 to 200,000 tokens, and your compute cost doesn't double, it quadruples. That's the quadratic wall.
That's why we've been stuck around a million tokens, give or take, across the whole frontier.
At a million tokens, you're doing a trillion pairwise attention computations per layer, per head. The memory requirements for the key value cache alone become enormous. This isn't a soft ceiling, it's a hard mathematical constraint. Every lab has been working around it with what are essentially clever hacks. RAG, agentic decomposition, sliding windows, they're all ways of saying, we can't actually pay attention to everything, so let's find a way to only pay attention to some things.
Subquadratic's claim is that they've made attention scale linearly instead of quadratically. The article says their architecture, subquadratic selective attention, runs 52 times faster than dense attention at a million tokens. That's not a minor optimization. That's a different complexity class.
Right, and this is the part where we need to get precise. The ideal is O of n, linear scaling, where doubling context doubles cost. But subquadratic can mean O of n log n, or even O of n to the 1.5. Anything that breaks the n squared curve. The article CTO, Alex Whedon, makes a really important distinction. He says hybrids give you what he calls a scalar benefit. You get cheaper at every context length by the same factor. But a pure subquadratic mechanism gives you a scaling law advantage. The gap between quadratic and subquadratic widens as context grows. At 128k tokens, they report a 7.2 times speedup. At a million tokens, it's 52 times. That curve is the whole story.
Let me play the skeptic for a second. We've heard claims like this before. Magic.dev announced a 100 million token context window back in August 2024, raised over $500 million, and as of early 2026, the article notes there's no public evidence of their LTM2 mini being used outside Magic. The category's track record is spotty.
Completely fair, and Lardinois flags that explicitly. But what makes Subquadratic's claims more interesting is that they've published actual benchmarks against frontier models, and the numbers are specific and falsifiable. They're not just saying, we have a big window. They're saying, here's our score on Ruler at 128k, here's our MRCR V2 score, here's our SWE bench verified number. And some of these are genuinely eyebrow-raising. MRCR V2 is the multi-reference retrieval benchmark that labs use internally. 5 scores 74%. Claude Opus 4.7 scores 32.2%, a huge spread that tells you how differently models handle long context retrieval. Subquadratic claims 83 on that same benchmark, 9 points above OpenAI's best.
That's a wild number. 9 points on a retrieval benchmark against GPT-5.5 isn't incremental. That's a step change, but we should talk about what's actually happening architecturally, because subquadratic attention isn't one thing. It's a family of approaches that have been evolving for years.
Let me walk through the lineage. The first wave was fixed, pattern sparse attention, models like Longformer, where each token only attends to a sliding window of nearby tokens. It scales linearly, but it breaks catastrophically when the information you need isn't nearby. If the answer to your question is in paragraph 2 and the context is in paragraph 4000, a sliding window misses it entirely. So it's cheap, but brittle. Then you get the state space model wave, Mamba, Mamba 2, RWKV, RetNet. These replace the all pairs comparison with a recurrent state that compresses everything the model has seen so far into a fixed size representation. The problem is, the compression is lossy. NVIDIA did a study at the 8 billion parameter scale and found pure Mamba 2 lag transformers on MMLU and on phonebook lookup, exactly the kind of task where you need to retrieve a specific piece of information from a long context. The gap only closed when they added attention layers back in.
Which brings us to hybrids.
Hybrids, Jamba, Kimi Linear, Qwen 3. Next, NVIDIA's Nemotron V3 keep most layers efficient and retain a few dense attention layers for retrieval. It's the pragmatic answer, and it works well at moderate context lengths. But a hybrid that's 3 times cheaper at 32K tokens is still 3 times cheaper at 10 million tokens. The dense layers it retains are still doing O of N squared work. You get a constant factor improvement, not a complexity class improvement. That's Whedon's scalar benefit point.
What did subquadratic actually do differently? The article describes something called content-dependent selection, without the indexer trap.
This is the key innovation they're claiming. The most recent approach before SSA was DeepSeek's native sparse attention, which won the ACL 2025 Best Paper Award and is shipping in DeepSeek V3.2 experimental. DSA's idea is, instead of attending to everything, learn which positions to attend to. It uses a lightning indexer that routes attention to a small subset of selected keys. The attention over those keys is sparse and efficient. But, and this is the trap, the indexer itself has to score every query against every key to decide which ones matter. The selection step is itself quadratic. You've moved the bottleneck, not removed it.
You're still doing the full pairwise comparison. You're just doing it in a different place.
What subquadratic claims is that their selection mechanism, how they decide which tokens attend to which, is itself subquadratic. Whedon describes it as content-dependent. For prompt A, words 1 and 6 matter to each other. For prompt B, it's words 2 and 3. The routing decisions are made based on what the query and keys actually contain, and the mechanism that makes those decisions doesn't itself explode quadratically. They're calling it subquadratic selective attention, and the selective part is doing a lot of work. It's the same word Mamba used, actually. The idea of making state updates input dependent rather than fixed.
The article says they have 11 PhD researchers on staff. That's not a trivial research team for a startup that's raised $29 million.
No, and their valuation is $500 million, which tells you investors are pricing in the possibility that this architecture is real. Justin Dangle, the CEO, says they're running on neoclouds rather than hyperscalers because the big clouds are, quote, very expensive. That's an interesting strategic choice. It means they're optimizing for inference cost from day one, which makes sense if your whole pitch is efficiency at scale.
Let's talk about the benchmarks in more detail, because there are some caveats the article is careful to flag. Each model was run only once due to high inference cost, the SWE bench margin. They report 82.4% versus Opus 4.6 at 81.4. The paper itself acknowledges that's harness as much as model, and Whedon admits their model is, quote, way smaller than the big labs.
Those are important caveats. Running each model once means we don't know the variance. The SWE bench difference is within the noise floor depending on the harness configuration. And model size matters because smaller models have an easier time with efficient attention. Fewer heads, fewer layers, less representational capacity to preserve. The real test is whether this architecture scales to the 100 billion parameter plus regime where the frontier labs operate.
The needle in a haystack result is harder to dismiss. 92.1% at 12 million tokens. No frontier model even operates at that context length, so there's nothing to compare against directly, but that's a strong absolute number. If you can actually retrieve specific information from a 12 million token context with 92% accuracy, that's a qualitatively different capability.
Needle in a haystack has its limitations. It's a single fact retrieval task, and models can sometimes learn to game it. But at 12 million tokens, the haystack is enormous. We're talking about finding one sentence in roughly 9 million words, or about 35,000 pages of text. That's the entire Harry Potter series, plus the Lord of the Rings trilogy, plus the complete works of Shakespeare, and you're asking the model to find one specific sentence. If they're actually hitting 92% on that, that's not a parlor trick.
Let me pivot to the implications. If the major labs adopted similar architectures, if we're not talking about a single startup but a broader shift, what actually opens up at 10 million plus tokens that isn't viable today?
I think the biggest one is code-based level reasoning without chunking or RAG. Today, if you want an AI coding agent to understand a large code base, you chunk the repo, embed it, retrieve relevant files, feed them in the context, the agent works on them, you evict them, you load new files. It works, but it's lossy. The model never has the whole code base in its attention simultaneously. At 12 million tokens, you can fit roughly 2 to 3 million lines of code. That's most large monorepos. The Linux kernel is about 30 million lines, so you're not there yet, but you're fitting very substantial code bases. The model can trace dependencies across the entire system without ever losing context.
You go from, I retrieve the files that might be relevant, to the model has actually read and can reason about the whole thing. That's a different debugging experience.
Imagine refactoring a cross-cutting concern across 100 microservices. Today, you do it file by file, service by service, and hope you didn't miss an implicit dependency. With a 12 million token window, the model holds the entire dependency graph in attention. It can see that changing this interface in service A breaks that assumption in service B, which cascades to service C. That kind of global reasoning is currently impossible without extensive human coordination.
What about beyond code? The article mentions they're shipping a deep research tool called SubQ Search.
Legal document review is the canonical example. A complex litigation might involve millions of documents. Today you use e-discovery tools with keyword search and maybe some embedding-based retrieval. But the model never reads everything. At 12 million tokens, you can fit entire corpora of case law, all the filings, all the exhibits, and ask questions that require synthesizing information across thousands of documents. The model can spot contradictions, identify patterns, find precedents that a keyword search would never surface because the relevant language doesn't share any terms.
Scientific literature review is another one. I'm imagining feeding a model every paper published on a specific protein pathway over the last decade and asking it to identify inconsistencies or suggest novel hypotheses.
This is where the retrieval benchmark numbers actually matter. If you have a huge context window but the model can't reliably find information in it, you're worse off than using RAG with a smaller window. That's why Claude Opus 4.7 scoring 32% on MRCRV2 is so telling. The window is there, but the model isn't effectively using it. SubQuadratic's 83% suggests their architecture isn't just big, it's actually usable at scale.
The article mentions they're aiming for a 50 million token context window by Q4. That's roughly 37 million words. You're talking about feeding in entire libraries. What breakthroughs actually enabled crossing from the 1 to 2 million range into 12 million?
There are really four concurrent breakthroughs. The first is the attention mechanism itself. The move from dense to sparse to selective, where the selection is learned and content dependent, but doesn't reintroduce quadratic cost. That's the SSA claim. The second is KB cache compression. At 12 million tokens, a naive KB cache would be hundreds of gigabytes. You need techniques like grouped query attention, multi-query attention, and more aggressive forms of KV cache quantization and eviction. Google's been doing interesting work on this, and I suspect SubQuadratic is using something similar under the hood.
The article doesn't go into their KV cache strategy specifically, but it's implied by the efficiency numbers. 52 times faster than dense attention isn't just about the attention pattern. You have to be reading and writing less memory too.
The third breakthrough is in training infrastructure. Dense attention parallelizes cleanly because every token attends to every token. You can shard across sequence length in straightforward ways. Sparse and selective attention create irregular communication patterns. You need new approaches to sequence parallelism, and the fact that they're running on NeoCloud suggests they've built custom infrastructure for this. Position encoding at extreme lengths. Rotary position embeddings, which everyone uses now, have known limitations at very long contexts. The high-frequency components can cause interference. There's been a flurry of work on extending Rho-P, YARN, NTK-aware scaling, and subquadratic almost certainly had to solve this to get good retrieval at 12 million tokens. If your position encoding breaks down at long distances, it doesn't matter how good your attention mechanism is.
You mentioned DeepSeek's native sparse attention earlier. Where does the research frontier actually sit right now?
The landscape is roughly four camps. You've got the state space model camp, Mamba, Mamba 2, and their descendants, pushing toward fully recurrent architectures that don't use attention at all. You've got the linear attention camp, which approximates the softmax attention with kernel methods to avoid the n-squared computation. You've got the sparse attention camp, which includes DeepSeek's DSA and now Subquadratic's SSA, where you learn which tokens to attend to. And you've got the hybrid camp, which is what most frontier labs are actually shipping. Keep most of the efficiency of the new approaches while retaining enough dense attention to preserve quality.
Subquadratic is arguing that hybrids are a local maximum, not the endgame.
That's exactly their thesis. Wheaton's point about scalar benefit versus scaling law advantage is the intellectual core of their bet. If you can make attention subquadratic without sacrificing quality, you don't just get cheaper inference at current context lengths. You change the economics of context entirely. The cost of going from 1 million to 10 million tokens stops being prohibitive and starts being merely expensive. And once it's merely expensive, product people figure out how to make it cheap.
Let's talk about what's not in the article. They're not open sourcing weights. They're offering training tools for enterprises to do their own post-training, but the core model stays proprietary. How much does that limit the research community's ability to validate their claims?
It's a real limitation. The article notes that Magic.dev made similar claims and then went dark. The only way to truly validate a new architecture is to have independent researchers run it through their own benchmarks, probe its failure modes, test its scaling behavior. Subquadratic is making an API. Available, which is better than nothing, but API. Access doesn't let you inspect the attention patterns, measure the KV cache behavior, or verify that they're actually doing what they claim architecturally.
We're in a trust, but verify situation, and the verification tools are limited.
The history of the field counsels caution. I remember when everyone thought reformers and linformers were going to replace dense attention overnight. They didn't. I remember when people thought RWKV was going to make transformers obsolete. It didn't. The transformer's dense attention is extraordinarily robust and flexible, and every replacement has had some subtle failure mode that only becomes apparent at scale or on specific tasks.
That said, the benchmarks they published are more substantive than what Magic put out. MRCR V2, RULR, SWE Bench, these are standardized community-accepted benchmarks. If the numbers are real, they've built something impressive.
The MRCR V2 number is the one I keep coming back to, 83 versus GP. T5.5 is 74 and Opus 4.7 is 32. That's not a marginal improvement. That's a different capability tier for long context retrieval. And it suggests that their architecture isn't just efficient, it's actually better at the thing that context windows are supposed to enable.
One thing I want to pull on. The article mentions they were previously called Aldea and worked on speech models before pivoting. That's interesting because speech models have their own long context challenges. Audio tokens at 16 kHz sample rate generate a lot of tokens very quickly. A 1 hour conversation is something like 500,000 tokens, depending on your tokenizer. I wonder if their work on speech gave them architectural insights that transferred to text.
That's a really sharp observation. Speech foundation models have been dealing with extremely long sequences for years, and the attention bottleneck bites even harder because the token counts are so much larger. If they spent time optimizing attention for speech, where you need to track dependencies across hundreds of thousands of tokens, it makes sense that those architectural innovations would transfer. The acoustic properties of speech also have locality patterns that might inform how you design content-dependent sparse attention.
Let me ask you a forward-looking question. If Subquadratic's architecture is real and scales, and let's say the major labs adopt something similar within the next 18 months, what does that do to the RAG industry?
It doesn't kill it, but it dramatically changes its role. RAG solves two problems. the context window limit, and the knowledge cutoff problem. If context windows go to 10 million or 50 million tokens, the first problem largely goes away for most use cases. You can just put your documents in context. But the knowledge cutoff problem remains. You still need retrieval for information that's newer than the model's training data, or for proprietary data that's too large even for a 50 million token window. What changes is that RAG becomes less about chunking and embedding and more about selection. Which documents do I load into this enormous context? The retrieval step becomes coarser grained and the reasoning step becomes finer grained.
You go from find the relevant paragraph to find the relevant bookshelf.
And the model does the fine-grained retrieval internally through its attention mechanism, which is almost certainly better than whatever embedding-based retrieval you were doing before. The MRCR numbers bear that out.
By the way, fun fact, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today.
Hope it's paying attention to our context window discussion.
Ironic if it runs out of context mid-episode.
Let's talk about the SWE bench number a bit more. Subquadratic reports 82.4%, which edges out Opus 4.6 at 81.4 and Gemini 3.1 Pro at 80.6. But the article notes this is harness as much as model. For listeners who aren't deep in the SWE bench weeds, the harness is the scaffolding that translates between the benchmark task and the model. It handles things like setting up the repository, running tests, parsing output. Different harnesses can produce meaningfully different scores for the same model. A 1-point margin with different harness configurations is basically a tie.
The SWE bench claim is the weakest of their numbers.
It's the least informative, yeah, but it's also the least relevant to their core pitch. Nobody is choosing subquadratic because it's 1 point better on SWE bench. They're choosing it because it has a 12 million token window that actually works. The SWE bench number is more of a sanity check. It shows the model isn't catastrophically worse at coding than frontier alternatives.
What about cost? The article says they're running on NeoClouds, and that the model is way smaller than the big labs. Smaller model plus more efficient attention should mean dramatically cheaper inference, right?
Potentially, but we don't have pricing yet. The API is in beta. The efficiency numbers they're quoting. 7.2 times speedup at 128K, 52 times at a million tokens. Those are attention-specific benchmarks, not end-to-end inference numbers. The attention mechanism is a big chunk of inference cost at long contexts, but it's not everything. You still have feed-forward layers, embedding lookups, output projection. The real question is what the cost per million tokens looks like at 12 million tokens of context versus what you'd pay OpenAI or Anthropic for a 1 million token window with RAG on top.
That comparison isn't straightforward because the capabilities aren't identical. A model with a 12 million token window that can actually use it is doing something qualitatively different from a model with RAG.
Right, which is why I think the pricing discussion is premature. If the capability is real and differentiated, they can charge a premium while the frontier labs catch up. The question is, how long that window lasts?
Let's zoom out to the broader trend. The article mentions that every frontier model in 2026 advertises at least a million tokens of context, but almost none of them are great at using all of it. That's the dirty secret of the current generation. The numbers are on the spec sheet, but the retrieval benchmarks tell a different story.
This is where the MRCR V2 spread is so revealing. 5 at 74% versus Claude Opus 4.7 at 32%. These are both frontier models from the two leading labs, and their ability to actually use their context windows is wildly different. It tells you that context window size and context utilization are two different engineering problems, and the industry has been focused more on the former because it's easier to market.
A million tokens sounds great in a press release. How well can your model actually find things in that million tokens is a much nerdier question.
A much more important one for actual use cases. If I'm building a legal document review system, I don't care that your model technically accepts a million tokens. I care whether it can reliably find the relevant precedents across 10,000 pages of case law. The MRCR numbers suggest that for many models, the answer is not reliably.
Do you think the frontier labs have been caught flat-footed here? A Miami startup with $29 million in funding beating them on a core architecture problem.
I don't think they're flat-footed. I think they've been making different trade-offs. The frontier labs are optimizing for general capability, MMLU scores, reasoning benchmarks, multimodal performance. Context efficiency has been a secondary concern because most users aren't saturating even million token windows. The labs have been content to let context be good enough while they fought the capability wars. Subquadratic is betting that context is about to become the primary bottleneck, and they've optimized exclusively for it.
Which is classic startup strategy. Find the thing the incumbents are underinvesting in, and go all in.
And if they're right about the importance of context, they've got a real head start. But the incumbents have something Subquadratic doesn't, distribution. OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, they have millions of developers already building on their APIs. Subquadratic has to convince people to switch, and switching costs in AI are non-trivial. You've built your prompts, your evals, your pipelines around a specific model's behavior.
The article mentions they're not just doing an API. They're shipping SubQ Code, ACLI coding agent, and SubQ Search, a deep research tool. That's smart. You don't compete on API access alone. You build products that make the capability tangible.
The coding agent is the natural first product for a long context model. Developers immediately understand the value of fitting their entire code base in context. It's the use case where the limitation of current models is most painfully obvious. Every developer has had the experience of an AI coding tool losing track of what they were doing because the relevant context got evicted.
Where do you see this going in the next year? If Subquadratic hits their 50 million token target in Q4, and the benchmarks hold up, does that force the Frontier Labs to respond?
I think it does, but the response might not be immediate. The labs have their own research programs and sparse and linear attention. Google's been publishing on this for years. DeepSeek obviously has DSA. Anthropic has been characteristically quiet about their architecture work, but they're not sitting still. What Subquadratic might do is accelerate the timeline, if their API gains traction and developers start building products that need 10 million plus token windows. The labs will have to match the capability or risk losing the high-end developer market.
The open source angle? They're not open sourcing weights, but they're offering training tools. Is that enough to build an ecosystem?
It's a hedge. They get some of the benefits of openness. Enterprise customers can fine-tune, the research community can probe the architecture through the API without giving away the crown jewels. But it also means the community can't independently verify their claims or build on top of their work in the way they could with truly open models. Given the magic.dev precedent, I think the community is going to be skeptical until there's more independent validation.
One last technical question. The article talks about selection being content-dependent. For prompt A, words 1 and 6 matter to each other. For prompt B, it's words 2 and 3. How does the model learn to make those routing decisions without the routing decision itself being expensive?
This is the million-dollar question, and the article doesn't give us enough detail to answer it definitively. But based on the research literature, there are a few ways to do this. One approach is locality-sensitive hashing. You project queries and keys into a lower dimensional space where proximity approximates attention score, and you only compute full attention for pairs that hash to the same bucket. Another is a small learned router network that's architecturally constrained to be subquadratic. For example, by only looking at coarse summaries of key blocks rather than individual keys. The challenge is making the routing decision good enough that you don't miss important attention pairs, while keeping the router itself cheap enough that you haven't just moved the bottleneck.
That's the indexer trap Whedon was describing. DeepSeek's indexer scores every query against every key. It's quadratic. So they move the bottleneck from the attention computation to the routing computation. Subquadratic's claim is that their routing is subquadratic.
If they've actually solved that, it's a genuine breakthrough. The research community has been chasing subquadratic attention with dense level quality for almost a decade. It's one of the hardest open problems in ML architecture.
All right, let me try to synthesize what we've covered. Subquadratic has launched a model with a 12 million token context window using an architecture they call subquadratic selective attention. They claim it scales linearly in compute and memory, runs 52 times faster than dense attention at a million tokens, and scores 83 on MRCRV2, beating GPT 5.5 by 9 points. The architecture builds on years of work in sparse attention, state space models, and hybrid architectures, but claims to solve the indexer trap that's limited previous approaches. If the claims hold up and the architecture scales, it opens up new use cases in code-based level reasoning, legal document review, and scientific literature synthesis. But the track record of similar claims in this space, Magic.dev being the cautionary tale, means independent validation is essential. And the Frontier Labs, while they may have been optimizing for other things, are not going to sit still if 12 million token windows become a must-have capability.
That's a solid summary. The one thing I'd add is that the MRCR V2 spread, G, P, T5.5 at 74, Opus 4.7 at 32, Subquadratic at 83, tells you that context utilization is about to become a first-class benchmark. For years, the industry has been in a context window, arms race measured by token count. I think we're entering a phase where the metric that actually matters is retrieval quality at scale. A 100 million token window with 30% retrieval accuracy is a party trick. A 10 million token window with 90% retrieval accuracy changes what you can build.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
A single surviving cheese strainer made of woven horsehair, excavated from a well in the Simpson Desert and dated to roughly 700 CE, contains trace residues of a fermented camel milk cheese inoculated with a bacterium that modern microbiologists identify as a now-extinct subspecies of Lactobacillus, making it the only known artifact documenting cheesemaking in pre-Islamic Central Australia.
I have so many questions, and I'm not sure I want any of them answered.
Camel milk cheese from the Simpson Desert. I did not have that on my bingo card.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com, and if you want more episodes like this one, leave us a review wherever you listen.
We'll be back soon. Until then, keep your attention subquadratic.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.